Hey there, and welcome to Making Positive Psychology Work, the weekly podcast where we uncover tested practical ways to help people move from functioning to flourishing at work, so together we can better navigate the incredible challenges and opportunities our world faces. I'm your host, Michelle McQuaid, and what you probably don't know about me is that I'm a passionate, but not very good, table tennis player. Oh yeah. Thank you so much for joining me for lesson number 31 of Making Positive Psychology Work. I'm so glad you're here because today we're talking to Paula Davis-Lack, a former practicing lawyer, an internationally published writer, media contributor, and a stress and resilience expert who's designed and taught burnout prevention and resilience workshops for thousands of professionals around the world. After earning her master's degree in applied positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania, Paula was selected to be part of the Army's Comprehensive Soldier and Family Fitness Program, was part of the team who taught resilience skills to more than 25,000 soldiers. She blogs in the Huffington Post, Forbes, Fast Company, and Psychology Today, and is the author of two ebooks, the latest one titled Addicted to Busy, Your Blueprint for Burnout Prevention. She's also the founder and CEO of the Stress and Resilience Institute, a training and consulting firm that partners with law firms and organizations to identify and address burnout and increase the stress resilience of their workplaces. But what you probably don't know about Paula is that she is highly competitive and used to drag race with her dad and brother on a quarter mile track. Welcome, Paula.
Thank you so much, Michelle. So glad to be here.
It's great to have you here because I love your writing and I've followed it for a long time, but I'm also intensely curious about why, given all we know about burnout, given all the money companies have invested in resilience training over the last decade, why is burnout still such an issue in our workplaces, do you think?
I really, really love this question because this comes up for me a lot as I am really kind of out in the workplace, really at the front end, seeking to educate executives and leaders and people about really what burnout is. And I find that while we may know a fair amount about well-being and even now know more about positive psychology and, you know, the resilience literature is growing, I still think that there's a lot of people who really don't know a lot about burnout. They know the word. We use it very loosely. A lot of people say, oh my gosh, I'm so stressed or I'm so burned out, without really understanding what that is and how it develops. And so, especially with organizations, I think they may be aware that there may be a burnout problem, but they often point to employees and individuals themselves and say, oh, you have a burnout problem, and not really know what to do about it. With the research showing, though, that if we're going to really meaningfully alleviate burnout, it has to not only come from us, we have to understand how we process stress and deal with stress, but organizations also have to take a look at their procedures and policies and practices and culture to see what is it about those things that may also be driving burnout. And I think organizations fail to take a step back and say, wait a second, we are part of the problem too. It's not just employees individually. So it becomes harder, I think, for organizations to look themselves in the mirror and say, ah, you know, there's some things about the way we do business that really have to change. So that's hard.
I think there's so many important pieces in what you just said. So I want to dive into a little bit of some of those elements more. Let's start with, you said that often there's a misunderstanding about what burnout is. So let's get clear. What is burnout?
So burnout is really a chronic process. And that's chronic is the word that I tend to emphasize when I'm presenting about burnout and talking about it. It's a really, really slow kind of process of chronic stress that manifests over a period of time. Unfortunately, I think we just get so used to using the word interchangeably with stress that they tend to start to look like the same thing. You know, I tell people, we all have stressful days, we have stressful weeks, we have stressful months, and for a lot of people, especially me, last year was a stressful year. So that doesn't necessarily mean you're burned out. So it's really something that's been happening over a period of time that is leading to typically kind of three big things. So it's lost energy. So there's a chronic exhaustion component to this, emotional and physical exhaustion. There's a chronic cynicism, like everybody starts to bug you or rub you the wrong way. And then you start to just feel really ineffective at what you're doing. And I tell people that for me, when it happened to me at the end of my law practice, I started to lose confidence and not so much in my ability to be a good lawyer, but to see from a big picture standpoint, where did I still fit in the legal profession?
That makes complete sense. And so then you talked about these kind of two elements, what we can do for ourselves, but also what organisations might need to do. Let's dive in first to the what we can do. So if we're realising that we're moving in towards that state of burnout, how can we build resilience and avoid that state?
Sure, there's a couple of big things that folks can do. And really the formula, kind of the magic thing that drives burnout is somewhat simple, and it's just having your job demands are too high. So it's too many job demands, too few job resources, and not enough recovery. So you're not taking time to sort of recharge your batteries in a meaningful way. So one of the things that you can do is start to assess, what are my job demands? What are my job resources? And how am I taking time to recharge my batteries both at work and outside of work? And then how am I maybe not doing those things? So that's one piece. And then really, you know, obviously where I focus a lot of my time is helping people build their resilience to stress. So that's another pocket or avenue or way for people to really start to look at, if I want to prevent burnout, or maybe I feel like I'm starting to burn out, what can I do from a building my own resilience skill set piece that might help maybe turn things around, or at least stop or slow what I feel might be becoming burnout.
So you talk about there the stopping or slowing, and I think this is the big piece of the puzzle, because what you're describing there in terms of things we can do to improve our resilience sounds simple enough, and yet I'm sure you find just as I do, when we teach some of those skills in workplaces, people leave with nothing but the best intention of making some of those changes, and then when you check in a few weeks later, not a lot, maybe nothing at all has really happened, and you ask them why, and it's like, well, I was too busy to get started. And so it seems that this step of actually slowing down, making some of that space to practice these skills in order to change that potential pathway to burnout is often our biggest hurdle. And I know you've got a fantastic ebook out on Addicted to Busy on some of this. So how do we get past that too busy to find the time to look after ourselves challenge?
Oh, so it's so funny. I'm about to publish one of my new posts in Forbes, and it's about things that we need to stop tolerating this year. And one of the things that I'm adding to that list is the I'm too busy narrative. So it's really, I think we need to start to become a little bit more realistic about our busyness without just saying we're busy and having that fly out of our mouths. And understanding, is our busyness purposeful or intentional? And I think a lot of us find that maybe it isn't. And the second piece, one of the things that I've really tried to do is distill a lot of the skills down to their essence and come up with what I call strong strategies. So strong is my acronym that stands for stress resilience on the go. So what can I help people literally do in 5 minutes or less, or 10 minutes or less, when they go back to their desk? Maybe they've just come from one of my workshops, or maybe they've read something. What is one thing that they can start to do immediately? They don't need to pull out a worksheet. They don't need to go back and look at their notes. They don't need to actually do much, but to actually start getting them to move forward. And so I found that there's really, you know, when you start to drill down some of these bigger skills into kind of their essence, it can be as simple as asking yourself a question. For example, where do I have a measure of control, influence, or leverage in this situation? So you find yourself really stressed out. Maybe you've just had a not so great conversation with your manager, and we go back to our office and we stew, or we try to wonder, what could I have said differently? Or what is it about this person that maybe he or she doesn't like me? We start to sort of just go all over the place maybe with our thinking. And instead, just asking yourself that one question really helps you to focus your time and energy on, okay, whatever it is didn't go so well, what can I do differently? Where do I have control, influence, or leverage in the situation to maybe change that and go in a better direction? So it's little things like that.
I think that's a great example. What are some of the other things you find, those small changes? Because I know, again, in a world where we've got lots of demands on us, some of those small tips can make a massive difference. What else do you find people try that can be effective?
Yeah, so one of my favorite mindfulness techniques is the STOP acronym. So the S in STOP stands for stop. The T is just to pause and take a breath. The O is observe, so really observe maybe mentally and physiologically, where is the stress impacting you? And then the P is to proceed. And I find for myself and from stories I've heard from people, it really helps to kind of boost your self-regulation. So I use it when, if somebody, you know, you want to really say something to somebody that's going to make you feel really good, but you know, you really shouldn't say whatever it is, just doing a quick little technique like that can help you really kind of call a little mental and physical time out enough so that you can take an appropriate step back and then maybe move in a different direction. So I love that mindfulness technique. And another thing that I tell people to do is to change their passwords. So this kind of glomming onto the priming research about helping your subconscious mind go in the direction of your conscious mind. Really, if you have a goal that you want to accomplish, for me, I don't set New Year's resolutions. I kind of think of a word that I want to have front of mind for the year. I convert that into a password. For some people, it's, you know, lose 10 pounds. For other people, it's, you know, make partner if they're an attorney. Whatever it is, convert that to a password, because we're typing in our passwords usually so many times a day that just that little jolt of extra kind of boost can really help you go forward in a better way with your goals.
I love that idea. I'm definitely going to try it. So as you look at all the different practices and what researchers are finding around improving our resilience, you know, what's surprising you most in there in terms of, oh, I would not have thought of that perhaps?
Oh, that's a really good question. So what's really surprising with the resilience research? I mean, for me, I am always struck by how simple resilience can be. So, I mean, really, when you talk about, you know, all of the research points to the fact that resilience skills can be practiced and improved, but really that it doesn't have to be complicated and that there are really a number of different pathways to improve your resilience. It's not just one set of skills. So finding something that resonates with people and really having them maybe start there is something that I know I use in my own teaching, but really the simplicity overall, I think, is continually what strikes me.
I think that's so important, because we often do look at trying to build something like our resilience and think this is going to be a very complicated and difficult and hard process. And yet, like so many of the other well-being skills as well, if we can find what lights us up in there, often it is incredibly simple, but it's the importance of the regular practice of those things rather than the ad hoc or thinking we've done it once and now our resilience is all going to be good. You mentioned earlier about how important it is not just for us as individuals to be working to improve our resilience, but for organizations to be supporting those outcomes of resilience as well. So what should organizations be thinking of in terms of helping their people avoid burnout?
Yeah, there are a few things. And I think one of the things that's really important is making sure that organizations provide enough resources for their employees. When I talk about resources, I'm really kind of back looking at those job resources that the burnout research points to in terms of being motivational and things that are going to help people really get energized about being at work and doing their work. So it's things like making sure that your employees have enough autonomy. Do they have any sort of decision authority? I hear that from so many clients, and it can be something as little as, you know, hey, I know this meeting tomorrow morning starts at 9, but we have this meeting every single week. I have an appointment or something in the morning. Can I come in at 9:15? Or not that I'm advocating that people need to not go to meetings that they're supposed to go to. But when you work long hours, even having the ability to say, can I adjust my schedule by 15 or 20 minutes can be immensely empowering for people and really go a long way. Things like making sure that you're giving employees enough feedback. I know when I practiced law, the feedback that I got was, hey, no news is good news. Great. That doesn't help me a whole lot, especially if I'm doing something well. It doesn't help me capitalize on what that good thing is and how could I do more of it. And then really making sure that there is leader support. Knowing that your leader has your back is huge, especially when it comes to the burnout prevention and building resilience piece. So that's one, focusing on making sure that your employees have the right kinds of resources. Another thing that I think companies can do, and I don't know how popular this is, but it's to normalize stress. And I've taken a lot from Kelly McGonigal's book, The Upside of Stress, how our narrative around stress is always, how's it going to hurt us? How's it going to harm us? What's the wrong, the downside of stress? And there certainly is that. But when you're talking about, you know, really busy professionals and people who are working in very stressful professions, that's just common. You're going to work long hours. You're going to, you know, encounter patients or people or circumstances that are going to be really difficult. And it's stressful. So why not chat about how the stressful situation has impacted you and maybe some tips and tools that you've used to go through that. I think it would help people enormously to know that they're not the only one who's experiencing this. And then lastly, I think it's just in addition to paying attention to the resources that I mentioned, it's also paying attention to the ingredients that build resilience and just keeping those kind of front of mind for leaders as they go about their day.
I think those are great tips, and I'm a huge fan of Kelly's book, The Upside of Stress. And I know for me, there was a big aha looking at her work of just going, oh, when I'm feeling stressed, it's just my body's way of saying, hey, something important is on the line here, pay attention. And so rather than feeling overwhelmed or dismayed by the fact that I was feeling stress, for me, it's become a really helpful way to get present in my body and think about why this is meaningful and important and what resources that I can bring to it. And so I highly recommend, if people haven't read Kelly's work, and we'll put her TED talk in the show notes from this, it's definitely one to go take a look at. Paula, are there types of workplaces or people where you think actually focusing on building resilience would be the wrong thing to do? Or is this something everybody should be working towards?
You know, I don't see a lot of downside to a person building their resilience skill set. I'm not sure that you could be too resilient. As long as you are thinking in a flexible and accurate and thorough way about situations, you're not going into a situation maybe thinking too optimistically about something, which I'm not sure if that would even be tied to resilience. But just as I was kind of noodling through this question, I really think that it's an important skill set for a lot of people to have. Some people might actually be really good at resilience and might not need as many of the tools. They might not need to practice things as much because this is a skill set that they've just somehow developed. So there's definitely that. I don't think we all come to the practice of resilience from the same place. But I see it as really a skill set, I think, that is important for everyone.
I completely agree. And I think, again, as long as you introduce it in that way of these are skills that we're building and we'll have different abilities in it and it will take some ongoing practice and maintenance to do it. I was thinking through kind of, you know, how might you unintentionally do harm by introducing these skills in the workplace? And the only sort of situations I could think is perhaps if somebody is, you know, really struggling with their resilience, and by introducing these skills, it adds more feeling of pressure on them of now I've got to be resilient as well and I can't talk about this. But I think the way you're describing it throughout this interview, by doing it in intelligent ways, you know, compassionate ways, open ways, where we're making it okay to talk about stress, to talk about the struggle, to normalize some of those pieces and to build skills that we can all share around it, I can't imagine it doing too much harm. But I'm happy if people feel differently, pile in and add the comments, because I think it's an important question for us all to be thinking about as researchers and practitioners as well.
You bring up a good point, because I mean, I think it's also back to, again, the way that you set it up and the way that you talk about it, resilience. Because, you know, you make a good point in that if somebody is sitting in a resilience training that I'm doing, and it's not a self-selected group, it's a mandatory training, say, for a group of professionals, and they're already feeling like they're not doing well, and they're already having a hard time, and might they take away the message that, oh, great, I'm sitting in this training because, you know, somebody, my leader or whatever, thinks that, you know, I stink and I have to have this resilient skill set or something's going to go wrong. That would be definitely a problem. I haven't really encountered that, though, a whole lot from what I've done. But I think it's definitely a valid point to mention.
I know I've had in training sessions on a couple of occasions, people contact me before the session from a company where they were being mandated to come into training, and they've called me and said, oh, you know, I'm under care already with a psychologist for some issues, but nobody at work knows that and I don't want them to know. And I'm worried that this session may be a little confronting for me. And so, you know, I always say, thank you so much for telling me. And then we work through some ways either to help them be safe in that room with me, or ways for them to opt out of that with nobody knowing sort of why they're opting out of it. But that was my only way I could think about, yeah, where have I seen perhaps sometimes people in a room struggle through this? And sometimes I think if we're, you know, striking some pain in there unintentionally, that's a little raw for somebody, and they don't want their colleagues to be seeing that level of vulnerability in them because they maybe don't feel safe or that there's enough trust there in themselves or in others that, you know, perhaps then it's something to be aware of, particularly if we're teaching those skills in groups. Paula, are you ready for the lightning round?
Yes, that'd be great.
So what's the most useful positive psychology tool or learning that you've applied in your own life? And let's take resilience as a given. So what else is there that you love using for yourself?
Sure. And this is actually one aspect of resilience, but it could be a standalone thing in and of itself. But the specific tool that for me not only do I love teaching it the most, but it has really, really impacted my life greatly is active constructive responding. And I think part of the reason why it's impacted me so much, so for folks, just to do a quick explanation of what active constructive responding is, it's when somebody shares good news with you, how do you respond? Do you respond in a way where you shut down the conversation? Do you respond in a way where maybe you hijack the conversation or the good news or completely ignore it? Or do you respond in a way where maybe you poke holes in the good news or somehow deflate the person who shared the good news? And one of the reasons why I think that was so impactful was not only because I had to understand my own patterns of how I was using it well and not using it well, but from my legal training. So my legal training is such that I am very good at noticing and pointing out what's going wrong with something, who's at fault, who's to blame, what the problem side is of it. And I was noticing that when people were sharing good news with me, especially people who were close to me, I was automatically going more into that lawyer default style of thinking where I would start to poke holes in the person's good news or say, man, have you thought about that? Like, what about this? And what about this? And really go into that lawyer mode. And it was really having a detrimental effect on some of my relationships. So being able to kind of step back and have that aha moment for myself was really important.
I love active constructive responding, and I agree. It's a great one to play with, particularly with friends or family to start, because it's amazing how much impact it actually has, and then to use it with colleagues and clients as well. Paula, what do you think is the must-read book for people wanting to bring out the best in themselves and others in workplaces?
So for me, it's a combination of a couple of things. It's one is the Upside of Stress, which we've already mentioned, by Kelly McGonigal, and just really anything that really helps to shift my perception or my story, my going in position of what I thought a concept was about really impacts me. And the other one is Daring Greatly by Brené Brown. And again, another big lesson for myself, and this came through my work with the soldiers, is how much I started to realize I wasn't showing up as my authentic self. I was really still showing up kind of as Paula the lawyer. Like, I wanted to make sure that I was all buttoned down in conversations, and, you know, I have a lot of perfectionistic tendencies that I work on, and people weren't really seeing me. They were seeing a version of me. And so really tapping into that authenticity and how vulnerability really feels very much like weakness when you're in it, but can look like strength to other people, and how, you know, vulnerability and authenticity really can be the birthplace of really important things that a lot of companies are looking at right now, like creativity and innovation, was really, really life-changing for me.
Two of my favorite books as well. What are you reading right now, and are you enjoying it?
Yeah, so right now I'm actually reading a lot of research papers. I'm really getting into a lot of the mindset research by Aaliyah Crum and David Yeager and their colleagues. And so I haven't cracked open a few books, but I have a few that I am intending to open very quickly. And the one is called The Psychologically Healthy Workplace. So again, it's just an edited book. It's just a group of articles by folks around a few specific themes about how do we keep our workplaces psychologically healthy. And then because my word 2017 is kindness, I am in the process of going through Kristen Neff's Self-Compassion. So I figured that if I'm going to start by having kindness as my theme for 2017, I should start by using it with myself and going back to Kristen Neff's work.
I think self-compassion is a wonderful kindness skill to be building. I'm sure you'll enjoy her work. She has lots of great tools as well. We often mention on her website, self-compassion.org, if people are looking for those. And if there's one thing you wish everybody thought about when it comes to applying positive psychology in workplaces, what would it be?
I would say to really keep an open mind about it and give it a chance, because I think as, you know, organizations are starting to learn, you know, maybe we need to think outside of the box from just traditional, you know, leadership and management theory to other bodies of research that could really, really help to increase the well-being and the engagement and the resilience and the health and the wellness of our employees. Positive psychology is really, I think, a great body of research for folks to turn to. So really, you know, having people keep an open mind about it. And there's lots of fabulous tools really that work.
I think that's great advice. Paula, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thank you for listening as well. For more information on Paula's wonderful work and to grab her free ebooks on Addicted to Busy and Resilience, head on over to pauladavislack.com. You've been listening to Making Positive Psychology Work with Michelle McQuaid. For the notes from today's show and more tested practical ways to help people move from functioning to flourishing at work, be sure to head on over to michellemcquaid.com. And if you'd like to perform a random act of kindness today, then share this podcast with a friend or colleague to help improve our workplaces. After all, as Coco Chanel wisely said, beauty begins the moment you decide to be yourself. Until next time, take care.